Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is the two-hour Zero Point radio show through BBS Radio. It is June 14th, 2010. This is the fourth year of the show, and I'd like again to thank BBS Radio. And I was realizing today how unique it is, BBS, that on BBS we don't have commercials. And so many other internet radio shows are broken up so much by commercials, but that's a real nice feature of the BBS shows. I have a website at www.zeropoint.ca, and I have sections from the six books I've written up on the site there, and a wide variety of articles and other features. So please have a look at my Zero Point radio site. And I'm currently promoting my book called The Heart Doctrine, which is available through North America now through Amazon. And I think this is a really very important book looking at mystical views of the origins of human consciousness. And mystical teachings suggest that human consciousness and the I experience emerge from within without through the higher dimensional physics of the human heart. And we, in a sense, we are ensouled through the heart. And the Heart Doctrine book looks at this issue from a scientific perspective and a scholarly perspective. And it explores those themes through a wide variety of mystical and esoteric teachings, looking at this issue of the origin of human consciousness. Within science and psychology itself, I would say this is recognized as the fundamental enigma or unsolved mystery within science itself. No one has ever been able to explain what is human consciousness. I also would like to make an announcement that I'll be on Don Nikoloff's show again this Wednesday night at, it's Thursday night, 1 o'clock Eastern time. So it's actually on Thursday, and unless you're on the West Coast, and then it would begin at 10 o'clock on Wednesday evening, on Don Nikoloff, through on the Evident Footprints show through BBS Radio. Okay, I'd like to welcome my co-host, James Moffitt, from Toronto, Ontario. How are you, Jim?
Good. How are you, Chris?
Good. A little tired today.
Yeah, so am I. Apparently, I think it's a weather thing that's going on because everybody seems to be having the same complaint. I feel kind of run down, actually.
Oh, yeah, do you?
Yeah, well, I've actually been involved in a very long trial at work, which is quite demanding, and so it's kind of, you know, you have lots of energy, and it's exciting, and you're charged up and, you know, running around, and then it ends, and then you kind of crash, and so that's sort of what I've been dealing with the last few days, is just sort of getting over it. Everybody looks tired that was involved in it. So.
Oh, yeah.
And then the weather on top of it seems to have added to the fun, but, yeah.
Yeah. My goodness, a lot going on in the world. But we have a guest who will be on in half hour, Jim, on the half hour, mm-hmm. Dean Nicholson, who we had on before. And I thought when we, with Dee, that we can kind of do a review of things going on in the world and address that type of issue. But maybe you and I, for the next half hour, we can discuss some of our mystical studies and such.
Yeah.
You emailed me that you were rereading the Heart Doctrine. I was pleased to hear your encouraging remarks.
It's been interesting because I had read, because I'm writing about you, and actually I've been writing this book, which I've mentioned before on the programs, called The Problem of God's Contracting Universe, which is sort of an overview of the development of your model of consciousness and also my own studies of mystical and esoteric teachings and how they relate to consciousness and ideas in modern science. And I have been writing the book for a couple of years, and I had written an initial overview of your work in three chapters and tried to show how it developed from the Gurdjieff and Fourth Way teaching and then through other esoteric teachings and then the influence of Madame Blavatsky's work, and especially through the Secret Doctrine, and how basic elements, and sort of, it's a very interesting story, intellectual, it's an interesting intellectual history, and when I sort of went ahead and wrote other parts of the book and discussed modern ideas about the nature of consciousness and what you call the head doctrine in modern psychology, which essentially states that consciousness is seen as being, if it's even acknowledged as existing, as being an emergent property out of the biochemical processes of the brain and your head, and then discussed other aspects of those ideas and how modern thinking on consciousness has been really actually quite restricted in its approach. And so I got to a certain point in the book, and then I decided to go back and sort of rewrite parts of the earlier parts, and especially the material dealing with your work, and realized that I thought I really needed to write another chapter. So at the beginning of the year, I reread The Heart Doctrine just before you had it published in its current form. And then when it came out, I started to read it again. And because it's a very complex book. There's a lot in it. I've read it in various incarnations probably a dozen times over the last 15 years because you keep refining it and reproducing it. And I've been helping you edit it and try to deal with various issues in it. And it was very interesting because, I started to read it a few months ago, and then I put it down. I just read the first 20 pages or so, and then last weekend I read about 90 pages of it. I got right into it, and I read two very important big sections. And some of the material that I hadn't really grasped, you have a very interesting discussion of Kabbalistic ideas and the relationship to creation and to the Tree of Life. And it's a very good commentary, very, very interesting. And for some reason, perhaps it's just one of those, moments when things kind of crystallize, but I got a much better grasp, I think, of what was being said. Not that I didn't understand it, but somehow I sort of saw new connections in that material to what we've discussed. And that's the most fascinating thing about studying these ideas is that you're continually knowing them in new ways and developing a broader context in which to relate things, and things become more integrated and more coherent and more self-reinforcing and self-consistent. And I guess that's what really struck me. And the other part was that I reread that you have a whole section called The Problem of God's Contracting Universe, which is very old material that you and I have been writing and rewriting and discussing for about 25 years. I think you actually started to write that in 1979 originally, so it's been a long time, and that's 30 years. Oh my God.
Yeah.
But whatever number of years have passed now, I find I have to add 5 or 10 on all the time. That's one of those little tricks about being in your 60s. That material was very interesting, even though I know that backwards and forwards. It was just, I was trying to read this book with, part of me was trying to read it for information, and part of me was trying to step back and read it as someone who doesn't know this material. And I've said before, I think this is a very important book in terms of the ideas presented. I don't think there's any model in consciousness studies, in modern consciousness studies, that's even close to this. And actually, the more I read about consciousness from other people, the more remarkable I think your work is, and the more important I think it is, because I think it really overcomes several of the major theoretical assumptions that limit modern thought about consciousness. I think the most important thing, like looking at it, I read somewhere, I don't even know where I read, and so maybe one of the quotes in your book, but I'm not even sure it was in your book, but it was that we have to, I think it's actually from Dr. Mishra, perhaps, where he says that consciousness is not produced but rather is manifested. And this is a very, very, very important distinction that totally escapes modern thinkers, because they're always looking for the site in the brain where consciousness is produced. But the esoteric and mystical perspective turns that on its head and says, no, consciousness isn't produced in the brain. It isn't produced within the human being. It actually manifests within the human being, because consciousness is this higher order principle, property, energy, matter, whatever you want to call it. It's something that's irreducible, and that it exists before everything and within everything and manifests without. And this is a very, very different approach to studying the nature of psychology, the nature of physics, the nature of metaphysics, the nature of reality, because it stands everything on its head, everything in modern thought on its head. I'm sort of wandering a little bit here, but I realized just in reading your book that, well, there's a couple of things, is that your articulation of the heart doctrine provides a very different, radically different conceptualization of how consciousness is manifested. I mean, it's a different perspective on the origins of consciousness, but even within that framework, it identifies, even within the framework that consciousness manifests, it identifies something that runs throughout the mystical and esoteric literature, which is, I think, is not generally recognized and hasn't been extrapolated, even by people who are sympathetic to esoteric and mystical teachings. It's interesting, because before reading you, I had never read anybody who put their finger on this and said, do you realize that this runs through all of these different teachings? And then on top of that, you have your explanation and your amplification and articulation of the idea of the zero point, and how the zero point is a concept which provides a way of explaining the manifestation of everything, all and everything within creation, from a world, from a sun to a human being. And again, this is something which, it's very daring, it's a very different explanation, but there's a logical self-consistency to the explanation, which I find really fascinating, which I think is I do believe that this is real, that this is accurate somehow. Obviously, it's a very big idea, and there's a lot to be gained by exploring and examining this. There's a lot to be still to be undertaken in terms of explaining it. But there's nobody that I think in my reading anyway who talks about consciousness, who even comes close to this kind of idea. And there's nobody who tries to take quite literally the ancient esoteric maxim, as above, so below, or man is a microcosm of the macrocosm, and says, look, there are principles on both the individual human level and on the level of cosmos that apply and describe creation dynamics and structures within the same framework, and that is truly revolutionary. And if it's correct, it's a mind-boggling breakthrough in terms of our understanding of ourselves and the nature of the universe. I mean, other than that, it's a pretty good book. I mean, even just saying that should give people an idea of how profound this book really is. There's just so much in it that you could read this book several times, and which I have, and keep gaining information and keep gaining understanding from it. It's quite an extraordinary work.
Yeah, I can't thank you enough, Jim, for the role that you've played through the last 15, 20 years helping me to refine that material. And I think over that time, with your help, as I refined it, I gained more my own voice and being able to write in a different way at the same time. And you played a huge role in that, as well as, of course, in exploring those ideas with me. And as you say, I find even myself, when I read the book, it's so neat having it in proper paperback format, because it allows me to read it as though it was someone else's book.
Yeah.
And it's like it's new again. And I mean, I was quite excited and thrilled almost to read parts of it. I thought they read so nicely.
Yeah, I had exactly the same reaction, and as you say, it's a little different for us because all these years you've been producing it in Sirlock's bindings and putting it out there, and now it's in the form of a book, and it's kind of like, oh, this, like, you know, it's a real book,
and
it's almost like reading somebody else, as you say. But that's a very interesting thing too. I want to thank you for the thanks, and I guess thank you for allowing me to participate in this, because there's an element of all this is that I find reading parts of it quite thrilling too, and I say, wow, it's quite thrilling, you know, but there's a part of it too is that it's like you wrote it and I helped you write it and we've worked on this and we've studied this and we've had endless discussions about these things and we've read all these things and everything, but there's a part of it too that is so thrilling that it's egoless. Like, it's like, I feel it's like, you know, it's your book. It's certainly your work, but there's a bigger part of it in which we're both sort of participating in something larger than ourselves. I mean, just to be involved in the esoteric tradition and to make a contribution to it is really quite fulfilling in and of itself, and there's a certain it inspires, I think, a certain humility about it all. I mean, we've talked about this before on the air, but I wouldn't put too much. I wouldn't be as what I'm trying to explain is I wouldn't make these bold and very provocative statements about the significance of this work if I thought this was just something that you thought up on your own, you know, or that you and I sort of came up with and it through our discussions. I mean, there's very much like you've done an incredible job of synthesizing and of integrating material and also extrapolating from it and seeing connections where I think other people don't see connections, and then bringing the mystical and esoteric ideas into the realm of modern scientific thought. And that's you. I mean, that's definitely you. But then it's the material that you're drawing on is this great tradition, which has been throughout human history has taken various forms and has arisen in various cultures and various circumstances and involved these great teachers who have come to Earth throughout, you know, human history and provided these insights and provided these shocks of new meaning and new awareness. And so it's you know, it's the famous quote about Newton, if I've seen further, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants. You know, it's like,
yeah,
you're building on these giants that's the humbling part, is that when you recognize how incredible these teachings are, it's a privilege to be able to work with them and to study them and to gain some semblance, some idea that perhaps you actually know something about what's actually really going on, which is it's definitely its own reward. But then when you see a book and you have a book and you say, hey, I wrote this book, you know, it's all of us have that inside us, especially as a writer, when you actually see the finished product and it's out there, it's very gratifying. And as I say, they'll be reading this book long after you're gone, and you know, that's a little bit of immortality, you know, however strange that might seem in a way, but that's, you know, that's your contribution, that's your legacy, I guess.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I see it in the same light as what you say. I mean, I feel privileged to have written it, and as you say, it's not my own ideas. I remember reading Uspensky in The Fourth Way, and he, at the beginning of that book, he says, like, if this book were simply my ideas, like, well, they might still be valuable and have some value. That's missing the point. Really, they're not my ideas. The idea is this is objective teaching. This is, like, revealed knowledge. And I feel the same with that book. It's not myself who originated the idea of consciousness emerging out of the heart.
Yeah.
It's I became attuned to that through my studies, firstly of yoga and Swami Prabhupada, and then it was like having a key that unlocks the mystery, that unlocks other mystery teachings.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, like, once you learn the heart doctrine, then it is a key to understanding different esoteric literature. Everything from Gnostic Christianity to Blavatsky's secret doctrine to Kabbalistic studies. And the other, you mentioned a little earlier the idea of studying the microcosm being based on the same principles of design as the macrocosm. And it's quite fascinating how in modern science they now trace our huge universe back to a singularity point emerging out of the quantum vacuum. That basic concept is the same as what mystics claim about the origins of human consciousness,
yeah.
That in a way we come out of the nothingness. And there's terms for that nothingness in different teachings, like in Kabbalah, there's the Ein Sof Hour, which are the three realms of non-existence or negative existence. And we emerge out of that. Or the Sufi says, not since God brought man out of nothingness have we ceased to be travelers. So this idea that we emerge out of nothingness and that we have a zero-point center, it's really most profound idea, and it gives a whole new significance to the idea of the microcosm embodying the same principles of creation and design as embodied in the macrocosm. I was pleased that you liked that section on Kabbalah, because that was really the last major addition to that book, and I have Guy Ritchie and Madonna to thank for that.
Oh, yeah.
They flew me to L.A. for their movie on Ego, and then when I had a chance to speak and they heard me talking about Kabbalah, they did an extra session of recording of my teachings on Kabbalah. And I heard one fellow in the film crew, he says, wow, that guy knew more than all the scholars. It went really well, and I've never seen that movie. I'm looking forward to seeing it. But I think the Kabbalistic model, that picture of the tree of life, where you see the man's heart is centered over the sphere of Tiferet, and how the three supernals come down into that center point, that's so profound. Kabbalistic teaching is just an amazing teaching. It's a shame that it's gained such negative press because people these days too much associate anything occult with the negative side. And they, like, I see that on, you know, people kind of waking up to the kind of deviancy of the black Kabbalists and the Masons and things like that. And it's kind of brought a dishonor a bit on the whole occult tradition. I had an interesting experience 2 years ago when I was up on Parliament Hill in Ottawa, and they had 9/11 on September 11th, 2 years ago. And they had a group that went across Canada from Vancouver, the Vancouver 9/11 group, and they had a bus. They traveled across Canada, all villages, and giving out DVDs and stuff like that. And then they had a group that walked up from Montreal to Ottawa. And there was a meeting on Parliament Hill. And I was walking towards Parliament Hill with my friend, and he looked up at the Peace Tower, which is the main spire on the Parliament Hill. And he saw there a Star of David inscribed in the Peace Tower. And he said, oh, no, even here, you know, like, you know, there's the Star of David, you know, which is also called the Red Shield, and it's the same image as on the flag of Israel. And he kind of felt discouraged, and I said, Matthew, no. You see, that Star of David, if you looked at its center, from its center is where the motor was that moved the hands. So the Star of David had a central point. See, in Blavatsky's mystical view of the Star of David, the most important element is the central point. And in theosophy, she puts the Ankh in the center instead of a point. She uses the Ankh, which in Egyptian mysticism stands for the living entity. And it was just like in that clock on Parliament Hill, it had that 0 point center, and because that's where the hands were attached to, and that's where the motor was, which is like the living entity in the clock, in a sense. And then I said to Matthew, what that means is that it's really ours, and we have to take it back. It's not that they've taken it and it's theirs. It really stands for ours, and we have to regain control of our government. And he felt quite inspired by that comment. He says, wow, you really have an unusual perspective, he says.
Well, I mean, I guess it's like anything else. It's like, you know, whether it's Kabbalah or whether it's the meaning of various symbols, you know, I mean, Gurdjieff talks about the Seal of Solomon in Search of the Miraculous. And any esoteric, mystical, or occult teaching, practice, discipline, symbol, myth has various meanings. And depending on the consciousness of the person who's interpreting or articulating that teaching or myth or whatever, or symbol. So it's, you know, it's like people want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's the same as the argument about by the skeptics and the materialists and the atheists about religion, is that they cite the various crimes created by people in the name of religion and the various ridiculous ideas asserted by people on the religious basis, and they throw out all of religion, but that's totally idiotic. I mean, that's, you know, that's formatory thinking. There's either science or there's religion. No, it's not an either or question at all. It depends on the degree of consciousness associated with that. There are very, as Gurdjieff explains in The Search of the Miraculous, you know, there are different religions for different types of people, and there are three lower normal waking consciousness types of people, the intellectual, the emotional, and the physical human being. And for each of these types, there's a different type of religion. But then there's a religion of what he calls a man number four, and that's a religion of a person who's more developed in terms of their consciousness and their being, and who have achieved a certain level of unity and have a higher being body. And then there's a religion of a man number five and a man number six and a man number seven, and it's the same with everything. And so when people talk about, for instance, people talk about something like alchemy. Well, alchemy is a discredited pseudoscience which preceded preceded modern chemistry. Well, that's one way of explaining it. But alchemists, you know, some alchemists did try to turn lead into gold. But alchemy also refers to the idea of refining consciousness and turning consciousness into higher consciousness and realizing oneself. And so, I mean, it's like that with everything, you know. You can't, the words in and of themselves mean completely different things to different people based on their understanding and their level of consciousness and being and their knowledge of the subject. So it's very dangerous for anybody to, like you say, you know, the occult has these kind of bad associations for people because of the way they've been, certain ideas have been popularized and certain things have been characterized in movies and you know, popular books and stuff. But that doesn't mean that the people who are writing about them actually know fully what these things detail. I mean, I read explanations of how Madame Blavatsky, I read this thing on world population decimation, and this guy was trying to blame it on Madame Blavatsky and the secret doctrine. I'm thinking, gee, I didn't get that out of reading the secret doctrine, but, you know, to each his own, I guess. But it's dangerous when people grossly oversimplify these ideas and try to reduce them. I got to tell you this odd thing when you were talking about the three levels of non-existence in Kabbalah. When we completed the last program, well, you were talking about some of these ideas, and it was getting right to the end, and I wasn't even going to say anything, and then I said, because I was listening to you, and then I said, is that like how everything in the universe adds up to zero? And you said, yeah, exactly, and we started laughing about it. So after the show, I went over to have a coffee and to read for a while, and generally I would have probably have driven over, but my neighbors are putting a gate up in the driveway, and I thought, I'll just walk. It's about a half an hour walk. So I just walked over, and I walked back. And on the way back, when I walk over, I generally come a certain way, but I decided, no, I'm gonna go a different way. And so I was walking along the street, and I was coming up the street that I live on, but from a different direction than I generally approach the house. And somebody put some books out. And they were free, and I was looking at them and saying, hey, these are pretty good books. And there was a book on a science book by John Barrow, which looked really interesting. And then there's a book called The Big Bang Didn't Happen by Lerner, I think, is a British journalist. And it's about a 10-year-old book, and I thought, this looks really interesting. So I flipped through it, and I thought, I'll take that. And then I got home, and I opened the book. And inside the book, there was this Gary Larson Far Side cartoon. And it's two guys in lab coats, and they've got an equation on a blackboard. And one of them says, no doubt about it, Ellington, we've mathematically expressed the purpose of the universe. God, how I love the thrill of scientific discovery and this huge equation, and it all adds equals zero.
Yeah, that's funny.
So
I always like that in Aleister Crowley. But he calls the magical formula of the universe is plus one plus minus one equals zero.
Yeah.
And then he points out, but that could be converted. You could have plus n plus minus n equals zero. Like any quantity plus its opposing negative equals zero. And he calls that the magical formula of the universe. And it's so similar to how when scientists trace the origin of the universe back into the beginning of time, and they think that all these forces could cancel each other out until it all adds up to zero. It's that same notion.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting because just today I was rereading Uncommon Wisdom, which is Vitas Capra's conversations with various people. It's an older book of his, and near the end of his life, he met Heisenberg, Werner Heisenberg, and had some conversations with him. And Heisenberg read the beginning of the Tao of Physics and was very enthusiastic about it. And he was talking to Heisenberg about bootstrap theory and the idea that there aren't any fundamental building blocks and about the idea that there wouldn't be any fundamental equations, and Heisenberg thought that there still could be some sort of basic equations that would express the nature of the universe, and it's a big discussion about equations and science and everything, and I'm thinking, well, you know, there's in mysticism and esotericism there's an equation, and basically it's God is first one, then three, then seven, and really it's like God is zero, then one, then three, then seven, in a sense, it's like in the latent state, God is zero, but then the contraction happens, and that breaks the symmetry. You have broken symmetries, and then the one is kind of inherent in the zero somehow, and then so the one becomes three, and then you have all these propagating trinities, and then the three becomes seven. And I mean, it's funny because in a lot of the replies to Dawkins and Sam Harris and Christopher Hitchens and all these the new atheists so-called, I read one by John Hott, who's a theologian, and he kind of concedes that he's basically responding in terms of Christianity. He kind of concedes that there's nothing in the Bible that is scientific or that can be expressed scientifically, but that's where I, like, you know, and from a mystical and esoteric perspective, we very much disagree with that, because there's all sorts of things that all sorts of formulations that are applicable to science and that express the realities and are mathematical and do describe things that are directly applicable to scientific ideas and anticipate in many cases scientific ideas.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's another valuable aspect to the Hart Doctrine book,
yes,
is that most people don't understand anything of the esoteric teachings of their own religion. And I think if people understood that, it would renew a lot of interest in religious teachings. But that's been lost. Like, it's in Hinduism. And, you know, the idea of the Jiva Atma within the heart is basic to the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
But I've talked to Hindus and questioned them around it, and none of them have really understood that or considered that it might be have a scientific basis to it. So
yeah.
I think the heart doctrine helps people understand the esoteric side of religion, and it's in the esoteric side that religions are similar. And that's why I see the heart doctrine. I hope it's a book that helps Muslims and Christians and Jews and natives to understand and appreciate each other's religious traditions, because I do believe they all come from the same source. We're on that over the half hour, Jim, so we'll need to move along a little bit. I don't know, is Dee, are you there, Dee?
I am indeed, Christopher.
Okay, well, this is Dee Nicholson, and Dee's in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and I think a major force in Canadian activism, playing a role in waking people up, and I get about 10 emails a day from Dee, links to all essential and important stories, concerning what's going on, and I've invited Dee on for today's show, and we have almost an hour and a half, and we wanted to give an overview of varied news stories and look at what's happening in the world at this time.
Well, that's great,
Christopher. Maybe, Dee, could you give out your website first?
Can I just interrupt for one hot second here, Christopher?
Please do.
I have been listening to your conversation, and I have interests that I think you know from knowing me, but everybody else doesn't. I have interests that go well into the spiritual side as well. And I was just sitting here enjoying myself because you guys were talking about what I was taught when I was about 19 years old, and I won't say how long ago that was. That it's a cosmic joke. It's yes but no. And the formula of all things coming together to be nothing. It's just absolutely that thing said another way. So it was really a beautiful conversation, and I have to thank you for it.
Oh, yeah, thank you, Dee. Great. Yeah, we're in the spiritual war. I really see it that way on Earth at this time, and I think those of us who want the restoration of justice and the truth, the revelation of truth on this planet, I think we need to be spiritually empowered to face this beast upon us.
Absolutely. You were asking the gentleman for their website.
Yeah, if you could give that out, Dee.
No, not me, them.
Oh, no, you have a freedom.
Oh, okay. You mean our website.
Your
Canadians
website,
CanadiansForHealthFreedom.org is our website. CanadiansForHealthFreedom.org, just like it sounds.
Okay, so I had mentioned to Dee that I wanted to talk a little bit about a vision I have. Just to start off our session with Dee, and I just wanted to say a few things, and then we'll open it up for Jim and Dee's reaction to my comments, and then maybe we could go from there and do our World Week in Review. The main concept which came to me, I only woke up to what's happening in the world like 3 to 4 years ago when my youngest son showed me the movie Loose Change, and I realized we'd been lied to about 9/11. And that was like the thread that helped me unravel more and more of the deviancy of what's been done in our society, not only is being done now, but also what has been done historically. And the web gets worse and worse as you get into it, a little overwhelming at times. But at that time, I know I felt I'd always grown up in a Christian family, and I'd always thought of God as being loving and kind and forgiving and compassionate, and have tried myself to embody those things in my life. And when I woke up to what was happening in the world, I felt this sense of absolute wrath in myself, that, like, how could these people do this to me? I felt like I could understand, like, how God flooded the world, like in the time of Noah, where the wickedness was just so wicked. He just flooded the world, or, you know, he opened up the Red Seas and he swallowed the armies, or he brought down the walls of Jericho. I understood the wrath of God, which is something emphasized more in the Judaic tradition. They talk about having awe and fear of God. It's more an Old Testament, whereas the New Testament is more focused on loving and compassion and such. But anyway, in that period of time, I realized that if we around the world, like since 9/11, all the nations of the world have brought out anti-terrorist legislation, which allows you to seize the assets of anyone involved in terrorist activities. And what I realize is now in the world, there are millions and millions of people who are waking up to the fact that the real terrorists are not over there. They're not Muslim men over in the Middle East. The real terrorists in our world, they're within our own countries. They're within our own governments. They're the shadow governments. They involve they're centered in England, the City of London. They have these international bankers. Some of them are Zionists. Some of them are tied into the Vatican. These are the world's real terrorists. The people who are spraying us with chemtrails are actually perpetrating biological warfare against us. The people who sell us GM foods when they know they're causing cancer and lack nutrition, these people are also carrying out warfare against us. So I imagine, what if we could really seize the assets of the true terrorists? And what would that mean in the world? And that what it would actually likely mean is that you would likely pay off the national debt of every country on earth, because all the national debt are owed to these international bankers and financiers and corporate elites. And if we could get them in court and bring all these researchers together who can show the deviancy of all the things they've done through the past decades, It clearly we could establish that they have been engaged in terrorist activities.
See, I only see one problem with that, Christopher, and that's the courts themselves.
I see more problems with it than that. I mean, yes, the courts are taken too. I mean, the RCMP and the CIA and the FBI, these police services are owned by these people. Like the CIA, has been a terrorist organization for 50 years. They've murdered people around the world. They still do it. They finance revolutions, dictators around the world. The CIA has been a terrorist organization. Now, we thought they were to protect the American people, but they never were. They, even from the very beginning of the CIA, they were controlled by the Dulles brothers and these international banksters and so on. So,
all of which begs the question as to why they have an office, I hear, in downtown Toronto.
Well, our government is controlled by the same shadow government that controls the U.S. and England and elsewhere. I mean, we're losing Canadian sovereignty, and this is being done below the awareness of Canadian citizens who really have no idea what's being done.
And that's another thing we need to talk about in the remaining time, Christopher, is the return of the late, great Bill C-6 as Bill C-36.
Okay, so why don't you go into that a little bit, Dee, and explain. They brought Bill C-6. It's supposed to be a bill for consumer protection.
Yeah, no, this
but
is
But really
into...
what it allows is it gives the police all kinds of police state powers to enter our homes without warrants, and seize property, and they can even do this without trial or judge and jury. Maybe you could go a little bit into C6 and then
which is now
C36.
So let's not get people thinking C6, because if they write to their MP saying C6, they won't know what they're, or they will pretend they don't know what they're talking about. And one of the problems we ran into last time was that while Parliament had amended the bill specifically to exclude natural health products from that purview, that particular thing was what got a lot of letters and emails just trashed by members of Parliament and by the Senate, because they referred to something that Parliament had addressed. So, you see, we have to be very, very careful in terms of what people know. They must know exactly what's going on with this bill. And I have to say, having read it, and it's 44 pages long, it's a massive file, it's got all kinds of legalese language in it, of course, as you would well expect. And it has clauses in it that not only remove largely the process of due process of law in Canada, with one exception. Last time it went into the Senate after passing third reading unanimously, I might add, in all three parties unanimously.
Yeah, in the House of Commons.
Yeah, isn't that
interesting?
And
then it goes to the Senate.
And then it goes into the Senate, and the big issues were about the due process. Okay, that's what everyone was focusing on, and no matter how we tried, and believe me, Canadians for Health Freedom, we're a group of groups, we're not just a group. We have like 14 or 15 different groups that all operate with us as well as individually, and they range from anything from Fluoride Action Network to International Advocates for Health Freedom to, I mean, you name it, we've got fingers in every pie, and they back at us. We are very united. And we tried desperately to get the Senate to acknowledge one particular section of that bill, which has reincarnated as Bill C-36. And that is the clause that effectively makes Canadians subject to the dictates of foreign authorities, which are undefined, but which may include governments or groups of nations, according to the Interpretations Clause. So, you know, here again, they're telling us, guess what? You are going to no longer have a vote or say in anything to do with, quote, hazardous products. Now, let's just take a quick look at the fact that they amended it to exclude natural health products. Okay, yes, they did that. However, in the meantime, there's an interesting correlation between that and the failed H1N1 flu pandemic of 2009 and 2010, and ongoing, because it has not been lifted. A lot of people were conned into taking flu shots that, A, were never going to do them any good in the first place, and, B, were far more harmful and dangerous and risky than the government let on, and C, were also largely untested, and particularly untested on the specific risk groups that they targeted for, you must take these shots, you're vulnerable to this flu, you could die. And that's how they sold it. Well, on CanadiansForHealthFreedom.org, we have a page called the H1N1 reporting page, Canadians Please Report Here Adverse Events Vaccines. It's right on our homepage. It's on the right-hand side, and you just click on it, and it'll bring up this whole long page. There are over 300 reports and comments in there from people who have suffered damage from this shot, and they know it's from the shot. They know their own health. And they're saying that they tested clean beforehand. They had just had a medical, and they were fine and everything else. And you would not believe the numbers of people damaged devastatingly. Some of them can't work anymore. Some of them can't go to school anymore. Some of them are children and can't have a life. Okay? And our government, after purveying this hazardous product, okay, this hazardous product, which it admitted it never properly tested onto Canadians, now ignores all of the pleas of these people saying, you gave us this stuff, you promised that we'd be taken care of, where's our care? Now, this is the very same agency that wants overarching policing powers, where the minister decides on a whim whether or not something is dangerous to the public or not. And in the press last week, we saw this wonderfully articulated photo of our health minister inspecting a baby crib. So out they trot the old argument, if you don't pass this legislation, there's going to be stacks of dead babies because of bad cribs. And really, what this whole thing is about is making us subject to foreign dictates, such as the Codex Alimentarius Commission with their guidelines, the European Union guidelines, which are absolutely draconian and which will be covered in terms of our comprehensive economic and trade agreement that they're working on right now with the European Union, and also through NAFTA. And John Hamill from International Advocates for Health Freedom has also come out with evidence, because he went in on a Freedom of Information Act request to the FDA, and he's got all the evidence showing that the intent of the Food and Drug Administration in the States, which exists supposedly, purportedly, for the same reason as Health Canada, to protect the health and well-being of Americans, substitute Canadians, you got the similar agency. And he has proof, documented proof. It is heavily redacted, but you can see, you know, pretty much what their direction is. Their goal is to harmonize via these trade groups. Well, what does C-36 do? It makes us subject to those trade groups. And that means that your vote and my vote and every other Canadian's vote means nothing, because if trade group decides you're going to vaccinate everybody, you get ready well vaccinated whether you like it or not, even so far as to declare martial law to get the job done.
Wow.
Okay, this is what we're facing. Now, that is, admittedly, it's an extreme scenario. But given what's been going on in the world recently, do we really think those extremes are so extreme anymore?
No, not in the least.
What kind of health mandates do you think are going to come down the pipe if that oil casino in the Gulf should happen to erupt even further? I hear it's already on fire.
Yes,
under 5,000 feet of water, it's on fire. Okay, I hear that it's leaking through multiple vents that are opening up in the ocean floor. I hear that there are stories of emerging continents coming up and forming where the Gulf is. I hear all kinds of stories. Now, if any of those stories are true, any of them, what kind of health mandates do you think are going to come down from these groups?
Well, absolutely, I don't think we can trust our governments in anything, to be
honest.
We have
no sovereignty. It wouldn't matter if we had Howdy Doody as Prime Minister right now. It wouldn't matter.
Well,
we're already signed to these agreements.
We do. Yeah, we do.
I just was too kind to say so, but I've got meaner words I could say about that man. Lake Harper, indeed. It's as shallow as he is. It's only 5 inches deep. It's as shallow as he is.
Is it having to go through the House again, or is it just going to the Senate?
C-36 has just had its first reading.
In the House.
It has to go through... it has to go through a vote on first reading, it has to go to committee, it has to go to second reading, it may skip committee from there and go directly to third reading, we don't know. Bear in mind, the difficulty that we have is this. When Bill C-6, which, by the way, has had the one thing in there that the Senate recommended, has had it amended in a minor way. Now, this is the warrantless search and seizure. Now, interestingly enough, while they're begging the government to authorize, and this is Health Canada, mind, okay, the bureaucracy is asking the government to give them police powers to go in without a warrant to seize hazardous products and any records pertaining thereto. Okay, well, they were already doing that and have raided a number of people, including Dr. Eldon Dahl from Calgary, Alberta, who was literally burst in upon with a SWAT raid by Health Canada, pointed guns the whole nine, held at gunpoint for 11 hours for the awesome crime of selling vitamin B12 with folic acid.
Wow.
And there are now 50 criminal charges laid against him, which the Crown Attorney has admitted in front of Dr. Dahl's lawyer that the government only brought these charges because Dr. Dahl went public and told the Senate what Health Canada was doing. So for the sin of opening his mouth about details that happened to him personally and terrorized and traumatized his family over freaking vitamins, this man has 50 criminal charges against him. Now, if I was Health Canada, I wouldn't want to go there because they didn't have a warrant.
Wow.
Okay? These guys are beyond, and they entrapped him. They used entrapment, and that's provable, too. This is a rogue agency, and they demanded last time that they be given overarching police powers, and here's our problem in a nutshell. Parliament passed it unanimously.
Yeah.
So, being the fact that they have amended to include, they can't do it without a warrant now. Okay, but what they did was they went into the criminal code and they found a spot where they can bring in warrants by fax or phone, which to my mind should be at least challenged constitutionally because they cannot include a sworn statement. And you must, under criminal law, have an affidavit in support of a warrant in order to get a warrant. And under Canadian law, the police, when executing the warrant, must show you not only the warrant, but also the affidavit of support. A little fact they don't tell most people.
Oh.
They never have it with them, you see.
Yeah.
They never have it with them. All they have is the warrant. So if everybody knew that they had to have their affidavit in support, well, that would kibosh a whole lot of stuff. But, I mean, the bottom line is they've put the warrants back in, but they have minimized the procedural obligations that they have of obtaining one. They can do it over the phone. So they make a cell phone call to a previously tipped-off judge, boom, there's your warrant, and in they come, you know, tramping all over your property. They essentially, from then on, they've destroyed your due process. And this is tokenism. This is political tokenism. They threw us a very small bone and expect that we're all going to get hornswoggled by it. But you see, the whole thing's the red herring because the one they really don't want us to know about, the one they really don't want to debate publicly, is the subject to foreign governments thing. Nobody
would
touch it.
Yeah, but make that subject also to the World Health Organization, the World Homicidal Organization.
Bingo. You got it. That's
exactly
the thing, because when Margaret Chan last year, it was June 11th, I believe, last year, she declared a level 6 pandemic. Bear in mind, they redefined the word pandemic in order to declare one.
Yeah.
They had to lower the standards for calling a pandemic in order to declare one, because the flu itself wasn't performing according to expectations and never did.
No.
And now, here we are a year later, we got 300 and some odd Canadians sitting there on our webpage who are all raising royal kerfuffles now because they are in trouble. Their health is destroyed.
Yeah.
And their rights are being ignored. And in the meantime, our government's giving more of our health sovereignty away. And they're cloaking it in the unlikely position of hazardous products. And they think that they can pull this Delphi argument over on us. What they're doing is very simple. Remember I mentioned baby cribs earlier?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you see what the health minister is doing essentially is she's creating a scenario where this horrendous situation could occur if you do not vote this way.
Yeah, they use fear on people.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, they've used this technique, pitting one thing against the other, in order to make you choose a certain way, or at least lean that way for later conversion. I remember one of the most famous Delphi arguments I ever saw thrown at people was George Bush the day after 9/11, when he said, "You're either with us or you're with the terrorists. No middle ground." So she's put it into the Hazardous Products Act, knowing full well that most Canadians would say, yes, protect us from hazardous products. But not explaining the legislation, this is all political doublespeak, and she's not exposing the right information that is going to allow Canadians to understand that with this particular legislation comes the absolute certainty that we can no longer control our health laws. We can neither make them nor enforce them, because if they run up afoul of any of our trade affiliations, we cannot enforce that law. It must be repealed.
Yeah. So what would you most recommend to Canadians that they do?
Well, I would, you know, as always, please, people, get off your armchairs, because if we don't say no, it's a negative option contract, do you see? You know how negative option contracts are. You're contracted to something unless you say no specifically.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what they pull on us. If we don't speak out, they assume it's okay, and they go ahead and do it. And we don't speak out enough. We don't say no enough. Now, bearing in mind, saying no doesn't necessarily mean carrying sticks and stones and doing damage. And that is of particular relevance to anybody who wants to protest at the G20 or G8, which are going to be a nightmare in this city. I mean, it's already a nightmare. They've already got the barricades are already going up. So traffic's already rerouted. And people are just absolutely steaming about this. And, I mean, the whole nation's steaming about $1.1 billion.
Isn't that disgraceful?
It is.
Unbelievably disgraceful.
It is. But
the more mass murderers you get together, then the more police and army you have to protect them.
Well,
as though there's a group of Canadians with weapons who are going to attack them. I mean, it's such a fraud.
Oh, I know. Well, you know what's real interesting here is this. I happened to be going down to do an interview at thatchannel.com the other day, and I got on the subway. And the very next stop, who walks onto my subway car but the mayor of Toronto with two bodyguards? And I've known him a while, so, you know, I'm not afraid to say hello and use his first name. He knows me. So he didn't recognize me right away because I had sunglasses on and I was sitting in a corner and he was standing between the doors where he's protected on two sides at least by plexiglass and on the third side by the subway tunnel. And then on the other side, he was protected by two bodyguards. So really, traveling the subway is a bit of a security operation. I didn't miss that.
Yeah.
But I poked my head around the corner, and I said, "David, what are you doing here?" And I pulled my sunglasses off, and he says, "Oh, nice to see you." And he shakes my hand. And we started chatting in general, like, you know, how's it feel to be retired? And I noticed one thing, and that is he looks a whole lot better since he opted not to run again. Now, here's a guy who's been stuck with the functionaries of all this crap for so long that, you know, he was looking old and tired and drawn and worn out, and he looks tanned and healthy and happy now, and I'm good on him. But at any rate, I said to him, I said, "So, David, what's with all the cops?" I said, "Can you imagine what it must feel like to be one of those people for whom they have to spend $1 billion to keep you alive? Can you imagine what it feels like to be hated that much?" You know, and I saw a look cross his face. And I think I hit on something with him, because he put a hand up in the air and he says, "Look at me." He says, "I get on the subway anytime I want. I go anywhere I want. I always find people friendly and polite and nice, even if they don't like me." Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, that touched off. I actually wrote an article that's coming out next week in Agora magazine, but about that whole scenario. But you can see that the intimidation goes all the way down to our lower level politicians, the ones at municipal level. And in fact, when you look at CETA, which started out with the full name of the Canada-European Union Economic and Trade Agreement and now is boiled down to the Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement. This puts us in Congress with the all of the nations in the European Union and all of the horror that they're experiencing, Britain screaming about its sovereignty, France is screaming about its sovereignty, everybody's screaming about their sovereignty, and Greece just got took over, and, you know, you never know what's going to happen with Spain, you see, and he's out of that. Miller's out of that. But these very people...
Yeah, must be a big relief for him. I'm sure most people who get into politics have no idea of how corrupted it is.
Oh no!
A lot of them
go in blind. I can't say that's true for all of them. It depends on how long they've been mucking about in the back rooms, which I would akin to pig farms. So mucking about is exactly what they're doing. They're treading through generations of crap. But I have watched people come in with very, very high ideals. Ethel Blondin Andrew. From up in Iqaluit, no, where is she from? Up in Nunavut, at any rate. She came in, she was the first Aboriginal from the Northwest Territory area, north of the Arctic Circle, that had been elected in Parliament, and I met her just shortly after she was elected, and she was wonderful. Her intentions, her ideals were wonderful. And within a year, and I said to her on that occasion, I said, don't let the bastards grind you down.
Yeah.
Non illegitimi carborundum. Do not let the bastards grind you down. And son of a gun, where's Ethel Blondin Andrew now?
Is she the one promoting these shots? Was she?
She did in her own territory, but you see, we have Leona Aglukkaq as the health minister. Now she is the second one, and she went up there. She promoted. Oh, boy, did she promote. You know, take the shot or die was basically the, or risk death at least, was the battle cry of Health Canada on this one. And, of course, they provided enough scare tactics, none of which panned out. And they also minimized the amount of information given to people.
Yeah.
Right? So a lot of people, and you can see if you read that reporting page, you're getting the honest truth from Canadian people who have just, I mean, these are not activists.
No.
They're not activists. They're
they wouldn't have taken the shot if they were.
Exactly.
They would have known better than to trust the government.
Precisely. If they had anything to do with activism, they would not have a case because they wouldn't have taken the shot. But the bottom line is a lot of them, a very, very high percentage of them say, you know, I was afraid for my children or I was afraid for my fellow workers or I was afraid for, you know, whoever. And, you know, against my own better judgment, I went and got the shot and then boom, right?
Yeah.
Or some people would say, I believed the government. They said it was safe.
Yeah.
We were not told this information. You've got a whole page there of hundreds of names, hundreds of people who do not feel they got informed consent, which, by the way, is entrenched in law in every province and territory in this country. And where is Health Canada to enforce the rights of Canadians when it comes to that? Where is Health Canada when it comes to protecting Canadians from so-called hazardous products and then demands that they jam them in the arms of their babies?
Yeah, it seems nothing would fall under that rubric of hazardous products more so than their inoculation.
That's right.
And these poisons
are being
put into your bloodstream.
Yeah, and I've got hundreds of Canadians, which, by the way, represent only a small portion of those who have been damaged because only a small portion of Canadians are familiar with our website.
Yeah.
Which, again, is a travesty.
Yeah, just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, well, people need to know this, and they need to get the testimony direct from those who are suffering. And when Parliament is considering Bill C-36, as far as I'm concerned, unless parliamentarians get a good load at what Canadians are saying about the agency that is demanding overarching policing powers and what kind of a job they're doing at protecting the health and well-being of Canadians. Let's go. I say every MP ought to know about this. Everyone ought to be screaming about Bill C-36 and saying, you want to hand these powers over to these guys, and look what they just did.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we need to do. We need to get off our armchairs, and we need to start screaming. Because if we don't, they get away with it. It's as simple as that. Tacit consent, negative option sales.
Yeah. I mean, we have so many threats to us. Like, you just look at these chemtrails. Like, this is criminal, what is being done. This is
administration
of toxic substances.
Christopher, I'm jumping off my chair here. You know, you know what I have just found out? Okay, there are certain people, as you know, on this planet who aren't stupid and have figured out an awful lot of stuff. And this is one I heard. This is a theory postulated a couple of weeks ago with respect to chemtrails and what their actual motivations are. They're not quite as simple as dumping toxins on us to make us sick. Okay, it's not quite as simple as that, of course. But that's the one that is floated, because that's the one that they can fight. Like, don't be ridiculous. Why would we kill you? You know, that's silly, right? So they can knock that argument down with most of the sheeple just by shrugging their shoulders and saying, don't be silly. Okay, but there's another aspect of this that's not so easy to dismiss. And that is this theory that was postulated last week by G. Edward Griffin, who I have an awful lot of respect for. Now, Ed Griffin, he came out with a little video on YouTube, and he has it posted on his site, which is Reality Zone, I think is the title of the website. I don't have the extension in front of me right now, but it's Reality Zone. I think
it's a new movie.
Yeah, but his trailer is enough. The trailer is enough to let you know what's going on. And in the trailer, he exposes the nut of it, which really is enough to make anybody with a brain want to see the full movie, because this is what he says. He says that they're dumping all this aluminum. It's landing not only in us and causing us to have nerve fiber breakdown in the brain, because that's what aluminum does. It brings on early onset Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Okay, but it also is hitting our soils. If it's hitting us, it's hitting the ground, right?
Yeah.
So it's contaminating our soils with aluminum, which over the course of time is affecting our plant growth. And in the meantime, they've reduced the UV levels that are coming in from the sun by about 20%, which is why our sky doesn't even quite look the same deep blue it used to.
No.
If you look very carefully. And the thing that's interesting there is it's doing a couple of things. It's making us all vitamin D deficient. But it's also starving the light levels that plants require for proper reproduction.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Now, who on the planet, might I ask you, just off the top of your head, who on your planet, on this planet, has the kind of agriculture technology that can handle metal toxicity and low light? Who do you think? Three guesses and the first two don't count.
Monsanto.
You got it first. Monsanto. Try out a boy. Bingo. But you see how simple it is?
Yeah.
You know, and everybody's off chasing the one angle on it to which they can poo-poo and say, don't be ridiculous, why would we kill you? And at the time that's all going on, everybody's focused over there. What are they doing? They're mandating their ding-blasted seed all over the world. What happened in Haiti? They have an earthquake. Next thing you know, Monsanto gives Haiti this grandiose gift of Terminator seed.
Gee, didn't the Haitians burn it? That's what I heard.
Well, there's certain elements in Haiti that you know, are not going to burn them, and there's certain elements in Haiti. It's like anywhere else, right? Some people know, and some people will take anything as some kind of a solution.
Yeah, they're a wicked organization. I understand that they're are reports of 100,000 Indian farmers who committed suicide.
Because of Monsanto, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's so tragic. And I mean, that's been a major problem in Mexico, them forcing the peasants off the farms and undermining their growth of traditional corns and maize. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're
and
a
then,
wicked
and
organization.
Then, of course, and then, of course, there's Iraq and Afghanistan, too, because the first thing they did was to stop the farmers who are, bear in mind, traditional farmers with thousands of years cumulative experience. Thousands of years these traditions have been, save 10% of your crop for next year, right?
Yeah.
And what they've done is they've forced these people to use their Terminator seeds. They must buy their seed next year from Monsanto, and they've made it out of the profits of this year. You see,
wow.
They've changed it to a money issue, which, of course, will eventually lead to debt issues, because what's to prevent Monsanto from bumping up the prices on these bogus crops?
Yeah.
Nothing. And then what are you growing? And what can any of us grow if they dequalify the air as good for breathing, and if they damage the soil, and if they take away the sunlight, and theirs are the only seeds in town that'll grow? What are people gonna do?
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah,
I mean,
it reminds me of J. Edgar Hoover's comment that people are confronted with a conspiracy so monstrous that they cannot believe that it could exist.
Yeah,
and that's
what?
The situation we're in, is that these people, their deviancy is beyond the mental comprehension of most people. Because
oh, yeah.
Most people are good-hearted. Like, they, you know, they wish their neighbor well, and they care for their environment, and they care for justice and freedom and things. So most people can't believe these things our government is doing. It's just like, how could the Canadian government has deliberately allowed Canadians to be deceived about 9/11 to justify our involvement in Afghanistan, which is a totally criminal war for coffee, opium, and oil and military bases. But it's a completely criminal war. And the government has allowed the Canadian people to be deceived about it.
Well, they forced the Canadian people to be deceived about it. I mean, it's not allowed. It's forced. Make no mistake. These guys shut their own mouths. We don't shut them for them.
Yeah.
You know, they know the truth. Why aren't they telling it? And don't we elect them to tell the truth? You know, one of the things, Christopher, that I've been talking to a lot of people about, remember during your last conversation, you were talking about how who are the real terrorists, right?
Yeah.
And what that immediately raised in my mind was the question of what do the governments of this world define as a terrorist? And you realize when Margaret Chan could redefine the word pandemic at will, what is to stop these guys from calling anybody who disagrees with them some kind of a dissident or a terrorist? And you'll notice that in the DSM-5, the physician's reference book on psychiatric disorders, there's a new one now. It's called opposition defiance disorder. Oppositional defiance disorder. And that could take anyone who disagrees with governmental policy at the time and label them as mentally ill, which allows the government to take control of the individual and put them into an institution/prison. You see, all of these things are potentials. All of these things need to be nailed down. And it may sound paranoid, but I'll tell you, if you were the naturopath who sat 11 hours at the point of a gun last year, you might not think it was so far-fetched.
Yeah, I would think my house had been invaded by terrorists, which is what I consider them to be. When they terrorize people, when they have a SWAT team to come into an ordinary family home with children, with weapons, that is they're terrorizing.
And they've done that. They've done that.
Man.
Now, Dr. Dahl doesn't have any young children at home, but they did. He does have a daughter university-age daughter, and she didn't even live at home. They entered her apartment with the same tactics while she was sleeping and burst into her bedroom with guns. Okay?
Wow.
Now, excuse me, but all of this over B12 and folic acid, what the hell are they going to do over a real dangerous crib?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, do they shoot first and ask questions later? I mean, you put people under that kind of a stress, and then you use against them that they were uncooperative. Well, damn it, if I had a 57 Magnum pointed at my head by some guy all in black whose face I couldn't see.
Yeah.
Who just broke the door lock on my house, right, and burst in on me, I might not be so damn cooperative either. Especially if I were a purveyor of vitamins, not cocaine.
Yeah. Well, they handled the cocaine. They protect the cocaine dealers.
Oh, yeah.
So they, you know, because now it's known.
And they protected pharma.
The CIA has been the main importer.
Christopher, let's get back to what they did protect. Okay? Because this is critical for people to understand. What they did protect in the last year, demonstrably so, was H1N1 vaccine that was A, untested, B, risky, C, ill-advised and they knew it, D, without informed consent to the people, they pushed that hazardous product onto all these Canadians, and one-third of Toronto took those shots. That's about 1 million people.
Wow.
Now, they're disappointed in those figures.
Yeah.
I go right on. Now let's try next time they try this, let's try bringing it down to none. You know, because Canadians flipped their middle finger real quick at that vaccine. But, you know, what was really interesting is, if the thing was so safe, why do we have all these reports? And this is the same agency. Same agency. So when you talk agenda, you really got to seriously question who they're supporting, because they sure supported pharma. And gee, over in Europe, now, who's being investigated? It's like a who's on first argument, because it's the who. Who is being investigated? Who? Yeah, that's what I said. Who? Give me the name.
The World Health Organization, you're saying?
Yeah, because of conflict of interest. You see, they've got advisors who were telling the World Health Organization whether or not this all qualified as a pandemic. Those advisors are from the very manufacturers who make the vaccines. It's called a conflict of interest, and the British Medical Journal is investigating them for just such a conflict.
Wow.
So we're not talking
about... But they may be the ones who come up with the H1N1 in the first place.
They have
1,000 biological weapons labs in the States.
Christopher, before we go into biological weapons, which the sheeple cannot grok, okay, they can't get that. They don't want to ever think that their government would be so low, but they can certainly attach it to financial benefit.
Yeah.
That they know the government would do. And when you see a favored group being handed billions and billions and billions of taxpayers' dollars, okay, and then them paying another billion and a bit for security for these guys to truck around, okay, you can nail them on that. So why don't we stick to what we can nail them on? First of all, they issued a hazardous product and favorably influenced the financial bottom line of GlaxoSmithKline. Okay? They made some pronouncements that forced people to think that they were in danger if they did not go along. This is the very same agency that wants to make us subject to foreign authorities in our health law, which means we can no longer have health law that we can make design, legislate, and enforce as a sovereign nation. And yet we have a prime minister who keeps talking about how sovereign we are.
Yeah.
In the same breath as he talks about our international obligations. Now, if that ain't doublespeak, I don't know what is, and I would challenge Stephen Harper to meet me in a room. Come on, pal. Let's go.
These people
Let's go, because I've had enough
though.
Of his
I mean,
life.
That's partly what they do, is that they go, they become more and more secluded. And the press, I mean, the press has completely failed Canadians as well, because they're owned by the same corporate mafia.
So, well, exactly. I mean, even if you, but you see, the point I'm trying to make to you, Christopher, is I'm trying to keep these arguments that we're making out of the realm of what people used to call conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm doing that is twofold. Firstly, because we've got a lot of evidence that shows what kind of stuff is going on and why. That
yeah.
isn't in the realm of conspiracy theory. It's in the realm of fact. It's proven stuff. Okay? We need to stay there. We need to simplify. Use the KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
Right? Simplify the argument. It's Occam's razor time all the way down the board. All
yeah.
the way down the line, it's Occam's razor. The simplest solution is usually the best. Okay? And the simplest solution is to open your eyes and say no. Just say no. But don't sit there and say to yourself, well, there's other people doing that. And don't just send an email or make a phone call and think that that works. Now you've done your bit. Or sign a petition and think you've done your bit. You've done your bit when you've informed everybody that you know and care about that their lives are in danger, their children's lives are in danger of being rendered into a slave and master situation, literally, because this government is now rogue, and I don't care which party is sitting at the helm. And that's evidenced by the fact that C6 passed unanimously the first time, handing over the right to deny due process to Canadians and anyone else by a ministry of that government.
Yeah.
Okay? They've proven themselves to be rogues.
Yeah.
And people need to know.
I just, Jim, did you have any comments that you wanted to add in reference to our discussion so far?
Well, there's so many different things that, I mean, well, I guess I have one question is that about the people who have had adverse effects from the vaccinations. Is there any, this is Brady, is there any attempt to bring a class action suit?
Yes. Yes.
There are
people, but you see, the first thing that you have to have, there's certainly enough people for a class action suit, and I really hope those people find a way to get together and do that. There are suggestions for a class action suit. I've made them myself. There are a couple of law firms that would be interested. Bear in mind, these people, a lot of them haven't been able to work in months because of this. And so they're not only damaged, they're also impoverished. Their lives have changed. So we need to have a law firm that has the stones to do this and to do it pro bono and to take the publicity and do an Aaron Brockovich type of operation on these guys, because there's enough evidence to choke an ox. We've also got a couple of medical practitioners from both sides of the fence, MD and ND. They're investigating exactly, you know, what is the situation with these people. We suspect that the vast majority of them have one degree or another experienced Guillain-Barre syndrome, which, of course, is one of the risks that they said was minimal. But then, of course, they hit us with the squalene, right? And the squalene in an injectable form causes your body to reject all the squalene that is natural in the system and also happens to be resident around your nerve cells. So these people are getting all these neurological symptoms. They feel like they've been in the Gulf War, right? So the potential for a class action suit is 100%. The only thing that's missing right now is a lawyer's firm that's going to stand up and say, okay, we'll do it. We'll do it. Because I'll tell you, one suggestion that I got from an MD was, sounds like there should be a class action suit based on, now get this, the Hazardous Products Act. The Hazardous Products Act is the very act that's being updated with Bill C-36. Hello.
Wow.
So, OK, gets real interesting.
I want to find some time to discuss what do you think about the G20 meetings in Toronto. Do you think that there will be many demonstrators out?
Yeah, there's going to be piles of them, and some of them are going to be idiots, and some of them are going to know their stuff, and some of them will be troublemakers, and most of them will not be. And one of the things, I was going to mention this before, I never, because we got sidetracked, but I'm making it clear to anyone out there who is hearing me now, and anyone that I've said this to before, please, 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 if you intend to demonstrate, by all means exercise your right to do so. But do not endanger yourself. These guys have a level of security that is unbeknownst to any of us. It is larger than anything. It's three times the size and the cost of what we did at the Olympics. Okay?
Wow.
Three times the cost. It is 23 times the cost of three other G20 and G8 meetings that were held in other countries together, combined. Okay?
Yeah.
This is unprecedented. And they have sound cannons, which, by the way, if they use them, are not going to be able to discriminate the ears attached to the good people from the ears attached to the bad people.
Yeah.
Okay? So they've got all kinds of methodologies there we can't trust. So what's your best option? Protest, absolutely. Do not carry a rock. Do not carry a stick. Do not confront police officers. Sit down in Gandhi style. Sit down and simply say, no, we don't agree. Just sit down.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed also there's another conference on in Toronto. Do you have information about that? I saw Paul Hellyer is going to be speaking there.
Yeah,
and
I was actually.
I
was just actually reading about that. If you're referring to the one that is the counter conference, to be held with all kinds of free lectures and things. And you know, as much as I think that's a really good idea,
mm-hmm.
I think it's largely preaching to the converted at this point in time, and I think that the PR aspect that people have amongst each other, because it tends to range towards the sensationalism and uses words that the common public cannot relate to, okay? They look at demonstrations, and they immediately think, because demonstrators have been vilified by the media for years and years and years and years, they always suspect the demonstrators as having some kind of craziness about them, even if there's a grain of truth there.
Most times I would say it's agent provocateurs who are set up by the government. Like in Toronto, you've recently had that big security scare about the man who bought some ammonia. I mean, that whole thing, in my view, was just a false flag.
It's to try to
create fear so that people think, oh, we need this security.
Yeah, well, it was also basically to make people think that, oh, that $1.1 billion is well spent. And really what they did was they targeted a farmer for not having proper documentation, and it turned out he indeed was a farmer, and he indeed was using the ammonium nitrate on his fields.
Yeah,
you know, so they look like jerks in the end, but they can say, but we're protecting you. Yeah, no, you aren't. You're protecting them. You're not protecting us. Don't give me that crap. You didn't put cameras up to protect us. You put cameras up to protect them.
You didn't put
fences up to protect us. We don't have fences as a day-to-day rule, so you're not protecting us with fences. You're protecting them. And quite frankly, as far as I'm concerned, they should either hold their meetings in Iqaluit, where only a rabid polar bear with a taste for political butt might threaten them, or do video conferencing like the rest of us.
Yeah, but what you have to remember that you're overlooking, Dee, is that it's important to spend $1.1 billion to get a bunch of people together to talk about fiscal responsibility.
Oh, excuse me, and you think that's what they're discussing? Really? What'd you dream the next night?
That was a joke. I mean, haven't these guys ever heard of a video conference?
Exactly.
I mean, it's a complete joke. The whole thing is, and this is so over the top that I heard a bunch of guys from Alberta on the CBC the other day who are very strong small C conservatives who are absolutely disgusted by this. I mean, anybody can see through this. It's so transparent. I had the same reaction as you did, Chris, about the ammonium nitrate. It was like,
yeah.
Come on, what a joke, you know? It was like, you guys are being a little too obvious about this, you know? This is just, like, this is supposed to reassure us that the $1.1 billion is money well spent.
The next time
government says, oh, we don't have enough money for that, I mean, everybody's just going to laugh at them. I mean, it's a completely ludicrous situation.
It's totally ludicrous, and not only that, but I don't know if you noticed or not, but when they were talking about that poor farmer who must have felt like the weight of the world just landed on his head, can you imagine SWAT teams and helicopters and everything else, okay, because they must have made a show of it. They must have made a show of it, okay? If they did it to Dr. Dahl, you know it was nine times that, in case anybody had a camera, right? And that poor guy, they even racially profiled him and said he wasn't Caucasian.
And then was he or he wasn't?
Well, I don't even know. They never said that. You see,
but
they
why?
Always put their retractions on page 92, but all their headlines on page 1.
Yeah. Did you ever see that bombing of the bank in Ottawa? That was so funny. It was so obviously, in my view, a false flag event. And then they tried to blame it on native groups who were protesting the taking of their land for their Olympics.
Well,
and it was
the same thing,
in my view. It was a false flag event.
Of course.
Tried to create fear among the population so that we want more police and more security.
Yeah, and I'd like to know exactly who in the Flying Blue Blazes is this black brigade that they expect to come and cause trouble. Who are these guys behind the masks? If they're legitimate, then why aren't they in touch with anybody that we know? Why are they not connected overtly and honestly and straightforwardly with any group in Canada? Who are these guys? We don't want them. Okay,
yeah.
But the government says they're coming and they're going to cause trouble, and they use the Black Brigade to justify these fences and everything else. Well,
yeah,
we
it's
don't
like
even
having
know who
Osama
they are.
Bin Laden and his reindeer, you know.
Yeah.
And now Osama bin Laden's dead, and they still try to bring him up, and now he's got grandchildren.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, come on, they've reincarnated half the people they ever said they arrested or killed or ran over with a tractor. I mean, it's just been ridiculous. They have reincarnated thinking that people are too stupid to keep track, right?
Unfortunately,
or too stupid to use Google, right? That they can't figure out if you type in a guy's name and you pick up a news account that he was killed in a battle some 5 or 6 years ago in Afghanistan, then you read today that that same guy was killed in another battle. Well,
and the CIA set up the Al Qaeda in the first place. I mean, even
we called
Bin Laden
him Al
Qaeda. Was a CIA agent. He was in the American hospital in Dubai in July before the attacks. I mean,
yes.
The whole thing is so fraudulent. It's hard to believe people still believe it.
Yeah,
even though
and
I don't think
that.
The majority of Americans do now.
Yeah, and not only that, if you Google the name Tim Osman, O-S-M-A-N, or Ousman, O-U-S-M-A-N, Tim Ousman or Osman, you will find that that is the name that Bin Laden used while he was a CIA operative. And isn't that just interesting? And then you start making these connections. I love connecting dots. And you start making connections. Let's move on a little bit to the Gulf.
Yeah.
Okay, while we've got the time to do it. You look at the connections in the Gulf. Well, I did a little digging on a few corporate connections, and gee, I find the name Paul Sutherland popping up in three locations immediately. One of them is that he may not now be, but he certainly was at the time this entry was made. At the same time, he is the chair of the European Trilateral Commission, the chair of the European wing, okay? and he is the chair of British Petroleum and the chair of Goldman Sachs.
Oh.
Okay, now can you think of a more perfect triumvirate in terms of having caused and accomplished literally the devastation of an entire geographic region on this planet, and possibly, depending on the outflow from that, possibly the destruction of all life on this planet, with perhaps maybe a billion or so left, which is where they want it.
I mean, have you heard, I understand that Goldman Sachs sold off 40% of their BP stock 3 weeks
44.5%. 44.5%, to be precise.
Okay, and they also, at the same time, 3 weeks ahead, invested in this company that manufactures these toxic dispersants that they're using in the Gulf.
Yes, so they could make it back. You see, this is, mind you, you know, any corporation would do that in other circumstances. That is a translatable thing. It would be expected that they would do that. However, given the extent of this, and the magnitude of the crime involved here, I mean, you know, something that would be normal now turns to be horrendous, because it is horrendous, because now they're making money off the same tragedy they created. And how was that tragedy created? Well, go back to the fact that the whole thing happened because the concrete did not work properly. There were emissions of gas being noticed before the thing blew.
Yeah.
Okay, and who laid the concrete?
Halliburton.
Okay,
yeah.
Enter Dick Cheney, another familiar name. Halliburton laid the contract, and what are the reports and the admitted accounts of people who worked on that rig, who worked for Halliburton? Well, gee, we were doing crystal meth.
Wow.
Okay, and 11 people died there, and a lot more are going to die. There's an evacuation order that is not being told to Floridians, but there is already an evacuation order for the state of Florida, which is going to be totally destroyed, if not by incoming oil on the water. But they're now getting oily rain in Tampa.
Yeah, the methane gas in these substances, which is particularly dangerous, which can be airborne.
It's worse than that. It's worse than that. It's benzene.
Benzene,
okay, 15 minutes of breathing a high concentrated benzene, you're done. Okay? Now, by the time they call an evacuation order, most of the people that evacuate out of that state will probably have a lot more than 15 minutes worth of exposure.
Yeah.
Because they never call an evacuation till the last bloody second. And in the meantime, at Jacksonville Air Force Base, which is by Red Bay in Central Florida, has thousands and thousands of white FEMA vehicles parked on its runways ready for use.
Actually, I thought they were UN vehicles. I've seen the maps of that on Google, and you just see the whole air base is, I think they estimate 4,000 to 5,000 UN vehicles, I thought they were.
No, they're FEMA.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, from what I understand, they're FEMA, And that makes a whole lot more sense.
I mean, you wonder, like, were they put there in anticipation of this event, or were they just put there in anticipation of martial law being declared?
Well, considering after Katrina and considering the location of the actual oil spill oil keno that they have going on right now, they couldn't find a parking lot closer to Louisiana.
Yeah.
You know, there's no abandoned or disused airstrips in anywhere in between that's more at risk, right? More at immediate risk.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's hurricane season.
Yeah.
So, you know, another week or so, we could see a nice big tropical storm come in. Even a tropical storm is going to whip up the surface of the Gulf in such a way. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to Florida, but I can tell you that when a storm whips up the surface of Tampa Bay, it is a sight to behold. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's going to be, if there's oil in Tampa Bay, then that oil is going to wind up in Sarah, like it's going to wind up in Orlando on the other side of the...
It's unbelievable. This is a catastrophe. I don't ever remember a catastrophe of this magnitude. We've had earthquakes before in China, I think, that killed 60 to 70,000 people. But the potential of this calamity, and now they're saying it's not only gushing oil from where the well is, but they've likely opened up fissures in the ocean floor and that it's pouring out in other locations.
Yeah, not only that, but the video footage that BP was showing the world was not the main leak.
No.
It was exposed to be a secondary leak that they were showing so that it minimized the effect of exactly how much oil was coming out. But essentially, I saw a report the other day that said that, you know, you're talking about oil that's coming out under pressure from an underground cavern of unknown but gigantic proportions, and it is bringing with it not just oil, not just gas, not just the elements that they would expect, but also sand and little stones and all kinds of stuff that is picked up and carried along with the flow, just like waves carry sand and rocks. Okay? So
yeah.
What you're looking at is a sandblasting machine coming out inside a 2-inch thick pipe. And that
yeah, which will open the pipe up more and more. I mean,
exactly.
That's, I've heard one oil specialist saying that these pipes are 2 inches thick. He says it's likely under an inch by this time.
That's right.
And once it opens, once it wears through the pipe,
that's
then
right.
It'll more easily degrade the rock structures around that pipe.
Maybe. Oh yeah, it. But you see, the whole thing was like doomed from the start. Now. It's like you hire Halliburton, which has the worst reputation on the planet for doing things wrong, to
yeah.
do something that is so delicate, okay, as to affect the entire ecology of the planet.
Yeah.
And you put Halliburton in charge? I'd rather have Mr. Ed do it.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
know, at least I know Mr. Ed is going to be honest. And he ain't going to be on no crystal meth. You know, this is horrendous. What they've done is horrendous.
It's
like there's 40 million people in the state of Florida who are going. Their lives are going begging. Not to mention Alabama, Louisiana, and Texas.
Yeah.
And Lord knows what other damage. We're not talking about South American countries here, but you know the Gulf is attached to the Caribbean.
Yeah, and then they say as the oil slicks hit the main current, well, then it'll be transported up the east coast of the state and then over to Europe.
Yeah, it'll go.
So it will spread through the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, yeah, the Gulf Stream will take it right to England. And, aren't they happy about that?
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, the thing is that what people have to understand is, you know, the world is not a bathtub, okay? You pour water in your bathtub, and while there's water running into it, it's flowing, okay? But the minute you turn the tap off, it sits there and does nothing, right? Well, the world is not a bathtub.
Yeah.
And these waters are constantly in a state of flux. There's a cycle there. That cycle involves water being evaporated out of existing sources, going up into the atmosphere, coming down in the form of precipitation, that precipitation either flowing or melting and then flowing or whatever, but always coming back into the rivers that then source the ocean, and everywhere they empty into the ocean, you've got currents. So the whole thing has a current to it, ongoingly. So this
yeah.
oil is going to go all the way around the world eventually, and they're not trying to talk about that much. But you can't. I mean, there's no way they're going to stop it. You know, they probably could do a creditable job if they'd use those microbe things that people were talking about that literally eat oil and then die and leave
yeah, and then
toxic.
Feed the fish.
Well,
yeah, I've seen the notices about that. It's amazing that it shocks me that from when the catastrophe first happened, they had almost 40 days before the oil came ashore in Louisiana, and they had
nothing.
Done nothing to impede that
That's
oil
right.
from reaching the Louisiana marshland.
Well,
nothing.
That was easy. Now they got the media blocked off from the Gulf. You try flying over there and see how fast you're escorted to the ground.
Yeah,
they've
it's a no-fly zone now, yeah.
Yeah, they've got, it's not only is it a no-fly zone, and they cannot claim that it's a danger to fly over it. They can't claim that. So there's some kind of a political reason why they're not allowing people to fly over the Gulf. There's another reason going on why they're not allowing any kind of information out of there except what comes from their own sources, either government or BP. So,
yeah, or their corporate media that they allow some entrance to. Like CNN is doing a lot of coverage on the Gulf, but
well, isn't this exactly how they handled the World Trade Center?
Yeah. Yeah, they used the media to shape people's misunderstanding.
Exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, anybody who buys into mainstream media reports and says that's all there is, man, you got to get a life. You really got to get a life because you're not seeing what's going on right under your own ding-blasted nose.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a huge calamity, and I don't know what the solution is. I mean, nobody does. We'll just have to see how it unfolds.
Yeah, and this is the thing. How can you offer a solution of any merit when they won't let you know what you're trying to solve?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how can you do that? The microbial solution is real good to save the wetlands and this and that because, you know, one of the things that may be a good thing is that there's going to be a point at which no more oil comes ashore at any one given location. Those locations may be salvageable using that method, but I can't see an extraction method going that's going to have any value.
No.
You know, even the soak it up with hay solution. I mean, that's great, but how much hay can you produce, pal? How much hay or straw?
Yeah, and then they carry out this phony campaign where people are donating their cut hair. Have you heard about that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
how ridiculous, eh?
Well, they've got this solution line, right? They've gone so far as to say, you know what, we're such good guys, we'll even take solutions offered by the general public. And, of course, doesn't it make them look like they're trying? But the solutions coming out of the general public include that microbial solution. I haven't heard a peep out of BP out of that. How about that?
No,
you know,
and
so
in
if they're
fact,
really,
I think at one point, wasn't it even passed as a law that microbial solution was supposed to be used in the case of future oil slicks?
I don't know. I haven't heard that one, but I sure hope so. And I sure hope somebody has the stones to enforce it. Because if they're saying that they're...
It seems that they deliberately want this. They are enabling this to become a greater and greater tragedy.
Of course they are. Of course they are. Because, you see, if you were honest in asking for solutions, wouldn't you look at everything that came in?
Especially
the more
something
credible
with
ones.
A proven record like that.
Exactly. So, I mean, here we are, and they're saying, well, we'll look at anything. We're desperate just like you. We want to save the planet just like you. Really? Then how come you're not looking at all the solutions? How come you're picking and choosing and telling people, well, there's nothing we can do about this. We might be able to do something over here. You know, but they're not picking up on anything of value. And those things are being submitted and being promoted to them, and we know that.
Yeah.
We know that. So if they were honest, they'd be saying, you know what, we're investigating this microbe thing.
Yeah.
And we will invest in as much of that to do as much remediation as we can. But they're not. I mean, by their works ye shall know them. No kidding. Generally,
yeah, not
when
by
somebody,
their word.
When somebody turns into... you know, a criminal right before your very eyes, and then tries to equivocate their way out of it, I'm sorry, methinks the gentleman doth protest too much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bill Shakespeare. But, I mean, that's basically the way it is. They're going, yeah, but we're the good guys. We're the good guys. You believe that, don't you? No.
I see, Dee, we've just got 5 minutes left. A lot going on in the world. I think we're back again at risk of a new war against bombing Iran, which would be a next catastrophe they might bring about. And
I don't know what's happening
in Korea. There seemed to be fear that there could be further conflict there.
Yeah, well, we heard the trilaterals were on about Iran.
Sorry?
We heard that the Trilateral Commission was really heavy on Iran this year when they met in Dublin in May.
Oh, yeah.
They were also ticked off that we spotted that they're taking our sovereignty by trade group.
They were
real ticked off that we spotted that.
Yeah.
And now here comes Health Canada with C-36 doing just that.
Yeah.
You know, so I
mean, who the Canadians were who attended the Bilderberg meeting this last week?
Oh, you mean like the Premier of BC and Frank McKenna, those Canadians? Yeah.
Yeah, and Peter Mansfield from the CBC.
Yeah, and Heather Reisman from Indigo and Chapters.
Yeah, yeah.
She's perennial. She's always there. And then on top of that, there was the chair and the deputy chair of the TD Bank.
Yeah.
So we had quite a contingent this year.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, it'd be nice to seize the assets of all these terrorists.
Yeah.
All the media could be put back and we could have real media and it'd give the journalists a job again.
Okay. Just, I need to get this in real quick. Okay.
Okay.
When people are talking about this stuff, it is very, very easy to get caught up and to get really, really angry and start saying things that, unfortunately, in this day and age, we can't say without somebody putting a thumb on us and making us sound like dissidents and sound like criminals. And I am suggesting that one of the key things that they're trying to make illegal is the opposition to government. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's really important that people start considering saying, when they describe what they're on about, that they say, I'm not against government. I'm against criminals in government, aren't you?
Yes. It's a good point.
Because it's using the Delphi argument right back at them. You're either for criminals or you're against them. Which is it?
Yeah. I just wish the RCMP would ever catch a man. Like they have this big war against terrorism and they never catch any of the real terrorists.
Yeah, well, anytime you point a finger at the RCMP, you know, somebody winds up getting kneecapped. So you know what that means, don't you?
Yeah. Anyway. thanks, Dee, for being on today. Really appreciate that.
Well, thank you for having me.
We'll keep in touch and have you back again in the future.
Absolutely, would love to do it. And thank you for the opportunity of speaking and ranting and doing all those things I love to do.
And your website is CanadiansForHealthFreedom.org.
That's it.
Great.
Thanks very
much. Okay, and thanks for your emails, Dee. Can people be on your email list?
Well, let me put it this way. If my list gets too big, I can't send it out. But if they would just, you know, keep their eye on the website.
Okay.
Keep their eye on the website because all of this information is going to be coming forward over the next little while. And just keep their ears to the ground. We're not the only source. We don't pretend to be the only source.
No.
I would never do that because it's stupid to say it. But, you know, keep your ears to the ground and your eyes open, people, because it's only you who can say the no that can stop this.
Yeah. And we do, I think our main hope is the fact that there is a worldwide movement of people waking up to these, what's been done to us.
Oh, yeah. And there's safety in numbers. You know, there's safety in numbers, and we outnumber them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know,
but we need the military and police to turn and to honor their oaths of office.
Okay,
that's what I feel.
Well, not only that, but they're supposed to be serving and protecting the people. Well, what if the people say, excuse me, serve and protect me, not them?
Exactly.
What are they going to choose?
That's what we need for them to do.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Dee.
Thank you, Christopher.
Okay, goodbye. Well, Jim, a madcap world, eh?
curiouser and curiouser.
Have you been following this Gulf Oil thing on the alternative media at all?
Not really. I mean, I've been reading. Well, actually, I got a very interesting video talking about how this had happened 31 years ago, and basically technology hasn't improved one iota, and the same thing happened, which I thought was really, really interesting. You know, it's like, I mean, the whole thing is just so bizarre. It's so disturbing.
Yeah, it's so catastrophic. It's so tragic for those people in the Gulf, because they, my heart goes out for them, because they had such a beautiful lifestyle in a way, and such
we're
a beautiful part of the world, eh?
We're at the end.
It's so tragic.
Yeah, we're at the end.
Okay, so well, thanks, Jim. We'll be back in 2 weeks. I would like to thank BBS Radio. This is Zero Point Show, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. Thank you all.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye.